morning. Before starting this lecture on non-abelian gauge theories, I would like to make two short remarks about fermionic path integral that I discussed yesterday. The first remark is that this formalism of fermionic path integrals or fermionic functional integrals applies as well to non-relativistic fermions. So it applies to non-relativistic fermions as well. So I presented the general formalism, what is Grassmann integrals, and then I just show that if you take psi and psi bar, the Dirac field in a relativistic theory of fermions to be Grassmann variables and integrate over them, this works. It works also if psi and psi bar are creation and alienation operator for non-relativistic fermions, because the important point is that we have the Fermi statistics. So there are a lot of applications in condensed matter of this formalism. That's a way to compute things. Okay, the second remark is that I incorrectly said something about the Leibniz rules, which was not correct. Leibniz rule. In fact, the Leibniz rules doesn't state that two derivative operation over Grassmann generators anticommutes. They do anticommutes, but it rather states that if you have some theta or theta bars of the products of two Grassmannian numbers, this is d over d theta of g1 times g2 minus g1 times d over theta of g2. Okay, so this is the correct rule for anti-commuting variables, and you can check that it's valid for any g1 and g2. So there is a minus sign as usual compared to g. Okay, so this was my remark. Now let's go to start a discussion of introduction to non-abelian gauge theories. And today I'm going to discuss mostly, I think only, classical theory. Quantization will be discussed tomorrow. Okay, and I'm also going to discuss mostly the case of the SU2 group of symmetry, because that's simpler, but that's going to be a general discussion. So I assume that we have knowledge of what is a Lie group, a Lie algebra, what is the fundamental and adjoint representation of a simple Lie group like SO2 or SU2. And if not, just ask question. And in the lecture notes, you are going to find the notation that I'm going to use. But maybe I could just start to discuss for the case of SU2 what is this? Okay, so for SU2 where hi is the page where yeah call the notation for SU2. Yeah, here it is. So for the group SU2, which is a group of 2x2 matrices, unitary matrices, You know that the generators of the Lie algebra, let's go, it is a dimension 3. Whoop. Rank 1 and dimension 3. So it has three generators. There are three generators for the for its Lie algebra. Let's call it little su of 2, which are TA equal 1 half sigma A, where the sigma A are the Pauli matrices. So that's, this is the basis of generators. So sigma 1 is, I never remember, 0, 1, 1, 0. Sigma 2 is 1 minus I, I, 0. And sigma 3 is 1, 0, 0, minus 1. Okay? And they obey commutation relation, so the, what's called the Lie bracket between two generators, TA and TB, which is general IF ABC TC, where this is called the structure constant, is for SU2, FABC is just the totally antisymmetric Levi-Civita tensor. So, totally antisymmetric Levi-Civita tensor. Okay. This is just comes from the commutation relation of the Pauli matrices. Okay. So this is going to be my notation. Okay. So now, why do we need non-abelian gauge theories, which are a generalization of Maxwell's theory, which is abelian theory? So we do need non-abelian gauge theories in order to quantize a theory involving vector fields, so spin 1 vector fields, okay? And so it happens that the vector fields occur in nature. The electromagnetic field is a spin 1 field. Photon is a massless spin 1, so it has polarization or helicity plus or minus 1. And for QED, there is one charge. There is the electromagnetic charge. So there is a symmetry group, which is just the U1 symmetry group associated to charge. And non-abelian gauge theories are just needed when one wants to quantize a theory involving spin 1 particles carrying the charges associated to a larger group. So spin 1 field carrying non-abelian charges, so associated to a bigger symmetry group, okay? And it is known from the example of electromagnetism that when you have a spin 1 vector field, and if you have some matter carrying those charge, so it can be fermions, it can be scalars, the coupling involves the currents, G mu of X, associated to this symmetry group. Because that's the only way to couple a vector field that carry a spin index, A mu, in the case of electromagnetism. The only way to couple it to matter is through current. Yeah. And the fact that it involves a coupling to the current for electromagnetism involves that, in fact, There is a large redundancy in the definition of the vector field, because since the current is conserved, you can change AMU by a gauge transformation, and it won't change. So there is going to be a big redundancy. Well, that's because if you change AMU into AMU plus DMU, if you change AMU, I think, into AMU plus DMU, some gauge transformation alpha, if you have in the action a current which is DMU AMU, it becomes DMU DMU alpha, which can be rewritten by path integration as alpha times DMU DMU, which is zero by charge by conservation of the current. Okay, I think.
Yeah. I've seen that argument before. The only way to couple a gauge field to a charge is to a current. But there always seems to be an ambiguity. Like this J mu, like in QED, the coupling is psi bar gamma psi.
Yes.
Which is the U1 current you get without, you know, in a free fermion theory.
Yes.
But from the moment you introduce this AMU, if we talk like JMU, from the moment you introduce this AMU JMU,
yes,
like you change what your conserved current is in.
Yeah,
in that new theory.
Yeah, in QED, yeah, I think you are right. But in QED, this doesn't change the current.
Okay.
Because the photon. Because in QED, the electromagnetic field is neutral. It doesn't carry charge.
Sure.
But yeah, okay.
That's true also in scalar QED. But when you
it's true in any scalar QED. Or if
it's true that the field doesn't carry charge in scalar QED, but you do change the current when you introduce the coupling.
Yeah, but the current can be changed by a total derivative. You know.
Sure.
So that's right. Okay. It's just an argument. Don't.
Anyway, okay.
Okay. So redundancy implies gauge theory, gauge invariance. Okay, so the purpose of the game of building non-abelian gauge theories is to do the same thing for a theory involving current, coupling between currents of a matter for theory with higher symmetry group. Okay. So historically, as you know, Young and Mills basically invented non-abelian gauge theories in the 50s. For SU2 group, which was a group of symmetry of isospin of weak interaction. So this was physically not a good idea. The theory of weak interaction involves a much more complicated theory, the standard model. But from the point of view of mathematics and theoretical physics, this was a very good idea, because the idea was revived, I think this was isospin, but the idea was revived in the 70s, 60s, and 70s. So this was, in 60s. So in the 70s, of course, both for the standard model associated to SU2 cross U1, so the Weinberg-Salam model created by Weinberg, Salam, Glashow, etc., and in the 70s for the SU3 of strong interaction, this turns out to be the real stuff. Okay. So I'm going to now show you how you construct a theory for, in the case of the theory with SU2. Okay. So I'm going to consider a theory with SU2. And first, I'm going to consider spinors, so Dirac fields. So psi has two components, psi 1 and psi 2, which lives in the, so this is, they live in the fundamental representation of SU2. This means that the gauge, a symmetry transformation just has a to U times psi with a matrix U belonging to SU2. Okay? Well, let's call this G, I think. rather than U. This is an element of the group. Okay. Okay, and psi bar, of course, is going to be denoted as psi bar 1, psi bar 2. Okay. Okay, and the SU2, so now, so you have two Dirac fields, and the action is is integral d4x psi bar I d slash minus m psi. This is a Dirac action, but this means simply that this is psi 1, psi bar 1, psi 1 plus psi bar 2, psi 2. So this action is invariant under the symmetry group. Of course, psi bar goes into psi bar G adjoint. So that this works. So it is invariant under SU2, the action. And so you apply Noether theorem, and you get the current. And the current, as this is just generalization of the currents for electromagnetism, so Maxwell's theory, so this is just psi bar gamma mu Ta psi, where Ta are just the three polymatrices, so there are three currents. So remember, this is a two vector, this is a 2x2 matrix, and this is a two covector. This makes sense, okay? And I have not written the Lorentz and the Dirac indices because that's, as far as the Lorentz and Dirac indices are concerned, this is exactly the same thing than for Maxwell's theory. Okay. So we have three currents, three SU2 currents. Okay? Okay. And if you want to work with a scalar field, like the Higgs, let me call it phi, we have phi equal phi 1, phi 2. There is no adjoint. And the gauge transformation is similar to this one. This is phi into g phi, so it belongs to the fundamenta. The possible action is going to be d4x, and then I'm going to write 1/2 of d mu phi. Well, this is in fact this is going to be the adjoint. I write phi bar is phi bar 1, phi bar 2. I'm sorry, this is a complex field. Complex field. Because we are working with SU2, not SO2. So the action is this one. And then you may add some potential of phi bar phi. And the current is g mu equal, well, g mu a is then it's I over 2 phi bar times ta d mu phi minus d mu phi bar ta phi. Okay. So this is a current for a spinor. This is a current for a scalar field, spin zero field. And in both cases, you can rewrite the current. So you have three currents, which are numbers. Okay. But you can rewrite the currents as an element of the adjoint representation by just writing that G mu is G mu A, which is a number, times T A, which is a matrix, and summing over A. So in this, with this notation, G mu now is a 2 by 2 anti-symmetric, self-adjoint, anti-symmetric matrix. So it is an element of the adjoint representation of SU2. It's a generator of the Lie algebra, the algebra of. I'm sorry. This is add with my notation. This is Hermitian matrix. Okay. It's an element of the adjoint representation. So the current, the fields here, both these fields and these fields lives in the fundamental representation, and the current lives in the adjoint representation. Okay? Because the currents are vector, 2 by 2 vectors, well, 2 vectors, and the current is a 2 by 2 matrix.
So the current G mu is a 2 by 2
matrix? Yeah, if I consider, I write G mu by this matrix, it's a 2 by 2 matrix. So this is a 2 by 2 matrix that contains the 3 currents. You see? If you want to write it, let me write it here. It's written in the notes. Basically, so G mu is just, there is a factor. So this is, we just have to write what is, so we get a 2 by 2 matrix. So here you have Z3, here you have G1. We are going to have a factor 1/2 of G1 plus or minus IG2. G1 plus IG2. And minus G3. So you see that this is a traceless self-adjoint matrix. And out of the 3 independent elements of this 2 by 2 matrix, you get the 3 currents. And these are the index, the group index. 1, 2, 3 are the algebra indices. Okay? Yes?
So each entry of that matrix is a vector, right?
No. Yeah, each entry is a number.
No.
Because here, you take the trace. You see?
A little confusing. So your gamma mu is a Dirac matrix, or?
Yes. Okay. Then let us just write all the indices. Okay. Psi, in the case of vector field, is a psi A, with I equal 1 to 2, where I is an index of the fundamental representation of SU2. Is this clear? Oh, an element is a vector, has 2 vectors. Okay. Now you have the TAs, where A equal 1, 2, 3, which are index of the adjoint representation. Okay? Then you have gamma mu, that's a bit of a, let's write it gamma mu alpha beta, which are the Dirac matrices, where mu equal 1 to d are Lorentz indices, and alpha equal 1 up to 2 a Laplace, divided by 2 in the case of dimension 2, so it's 4 in dimension 4, it's d divided by the floor of d over 2 are Dirac indices. Okay? And with all this, g mu a is, and of course, TA is a matrix in the adjoint representation. So it is a matrix whose matrix elements are TA IG, with IG going from 1 to 2, because each TA is a 2 by 2 matrix. Okay, so G mu A is psi bar alpha. Well, let's gamma mu. And so each psi contains an index I. So it's gamma mu alpha beta. TA, which is one half of the Pauli matrices, so let's write it TAIG.
What is the alpha index on psi?
Alpha is just the Dirac index.
Okay, so the.
And psi.
Okay, so the psi are Dirac spinors. So really
beta I. Yeah, so psi here are spinors.
They're Dirac spinors.
Each psi I is a spinor. Okay.
So, yeah, I'm also a little bit confused because I would have expected that we have four components for the Dirac spinor. Like when we saw the Dirac spinor, we constructed it in one representation. For example, we got left-handed biospinor and a right-handed biospinor. Each one of them had two spinorial components.
Yeah. So the psi. I'm sorry. Psi has no, but
psi
is a spinor. So psi is a field, is a psi alpha. So you first have a spinor with four components and a second spinor with four components. So, okay? So all the complex components of psi, there are eight complex components, four. Because it's a spinor, a spin one half field, and two, because it's an element of the fundamental representation of SU2. So you have two spinors, psi one and psi two.
Okay, that gives me four components.
Yeah, so psi is a Dirac spinor.
Okay.
Four components in four dimensions.
Okay. All right, you're calling it a two-vector with a spinor.
I'm calling this a two-vector, and each vector
it's
is a spinor.
Okay.
Okay? Yes. Yeah. So if you write this in terms of component, here is the current where all the indices have written. Lorentz, and I'm sorry, there is a d mu. No, there is no d mu, so. Okay, so this is Lorentz, Dirac, and Lorentz, Dirac, fundamental representation, and I'm sorry, IG fundamental representation and adjoint representation. And the two indices that are not summed up are Lorentz because it's a current, and fundamental because there is one current per charge, and we have three different charges. Okay.
When you contract this with another TA,
yes,
you are left with the Lorentz indices.
Yes,
J mu should have D component.
Yes, I think so.
So why do you say it's a two-way matrix?
What do I say?
Up there, you say J mu is a 2x2 matrix.
Of number.
But G mu is a 2x2 matrix, and each element. No, G mu is a 2x2 matrix because each GA is a number. Now, we have contracted on all. Well, it's an anti. Well, for fermions, it's a anti-commuting number because of psi and psi bar. So if you prefer, think about the scalar field, where each phi, for the scalar field, each phi is a complex field. So this is a complex number, this is a complex number. And this is going to apply. You just apply this formula here. Okay. So it's fine. For scalar field, this is a complex number. And for spinors, this is a Grassmann number. It contains one psi bar and one psi. But it's a number, namely. It carries no Lorentz and no, well, it carries no group indices for the fundamental representation. And it carries no Dirac indices.
Okay. I'm just confused. Like on the left hand side you have the index mu, but from the right hand side I don't see where.
And you have to put the mu in the.
Mu is in the gamma.
Here.
No. Up there in the.
This is a 2x2 matrix that I'm calling G mu.
Yeah, but you have to put the Lorentz index for each of the G.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry. This is a typo or a mistake of mine. Yes, I'm sorry.
So each component of the matrix is a Lorentz
vector. I'm very sorry. Of course. Yes.
It was a confusion.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. No. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so keep this as a notation. And this is a definition of the current for fermions. And this is a definition of currents for scalars. Okay. Good. Okay, so this is one, two. So this is the theory with no vector field. Now I want to introduce a vector field. The analog of the electromagnetic field, but for a theory where we have three charges. Okay. So since we have three charges, we expect that we need three fields, one coupled to each charge. So we are going to consider that we have, in this case, three vectors field, A mu A, A equal 1 to 3. Okay. Okay. So since we have three charges, because the charges belong to the adjoint representation, we expect to have three vector fields. And we expect that they belong to the adjoint representation because they are going to be coupled to the current which belongs to the adjoint representation. You can check that a global transformation, a symmetry transformation, acts on the current like with a G dagger here and a G here. So it acts like on the G belongs to the adjoint representation. So mu belongs to the adjoint representation. So in the same way, we can write a 2x2 traceless Hermitian matrix that I'm going to call A mu, which is just A mu A T A summed over A. So in terms of in terms of component, this is a 2x2 matrix with element of mu3, mu1 minus I mu2, mu1 plus I times mu2, and minus I, I'm sorry, and then minus a mu3. Okay, so this is a compact way to group the three vector fields into one field that belongs to the adjoint representation of SU2. So you have a 2x2 traceless symmetric matrices whose elements are vectors. And out of these elements, you reconstruct the three MU1, MU2, MU3. Okay, so this is going to be a convenient rotation. Okay. Okay. Now, in order to couple, so this is vector field. Now, in order to describe the coupling with matter, we proceed as for the Maxwell electromagnetic field, or QED. We introduce a covariant derivative. So we are going to replace the coupling in the Dirac field. Why? It's called the covariant derivative. Okay. So, if we are going to write, so the covariant derivative is a derivative acting on some field. It can be the spinor, or it can be the scalar. Okay? So the covariant derivative that I'm going to call d mu, it depends on A. On A, and it acts on the fields. So here we have psi and we have phi. Okay? And it is defined simply as in electromagnetism, but if we have d mu, some field phi, that belongs to the fundamental representation of SU2. D mu phi is just the ordinary derivative minus I times A mu A times the generators TA times phi. Okay? Where here the TA are the 2x2 matrices, which are the generators of the group SU2 acting on the fundamental representation. So in terms of indices, remember, if the field phi belong to the fundamental representation, this means that we have the carry an index I going from 1 to 2. So in this representation for SU2, this is d mu of phi I equal the ordinary derivative d mu of phi I minus I times
A mu.
This is an index that goes from 1 to 3. And then we take the matrix TA, the index IG, since it's a 2 by 2 matrix, times phi G. So remember, this is a, for SU2, this is a 2 vector. This is a 2 by 2 matrix. And A mu is just a real field. It's a constant. It's a real field. So each component, A mu A, is a real field. OK. And of course, everything depends on x. So A mu of E depends on x. Phi depends on x. And psi A depends on x. OK. So this is a definition of the covariant derivative. And it's just the generalization of what you have seen in QED, Maxwell theory. This, for the moment, this is a classical theory. OK? OK. And so this is the definition of the covariant derivative acting on fields in the fundamental representation. Okay? So now there is I'm going to use to need another definition, more general representation. So this is for the fundamental representation. Now we are going to consider, we have to consider what is the action of the how to define a covariant derivative when it acts on fields that belongs to higher representation of the group field. That's going to be necessary because the current itself lives in the adjoint representation. So now, if the field phi belongs to some representation R of the field, namely that's a vector space in which on which the group acts, you see. To each generator TA of the field, we have a generator TAR of the group, SU2, in the representation R. So if this representation R has dimension dr, and the dimension is 3 or 5 or whatever it is, so this is a dr by dr matrix instead of being a 2 by 2 matrix in the case of the fundamental representation. And then the definition of the covariant derivative is that d mu of phi in this R representation, let's call it phi R, is the ordinary derivative. And then, of course, you have to replace the generator of the group by the generator of the group in the representation. So minus I phi R times TR L times phi, I'm sorry, no, minus A mu, I'm sorry. A mu A times phi R. So this is an DR vector. This is a DR times DR matrix. Okay, and this each A mu A is just a real number. And so you see, so A still goes from 1 to 3 for SU2. It's just the field and the matrix that becomes d-dimensional object, okay? And something very important, for a field phi A that belongs to the adjoint representation, if a field phi A belongs to the adjoint representation, it means that it is a 2x2 traceless symmetric matrix. So phi A can be written as, I'm sorry, the phi adjoint can be written as exactly as we said, as phi 3 minus phi 3 phi 1 minus I phi 2 and phi 1 plus I phi 2. Okay? So it's a 2x2 matrix. Then d mu, the covariant derivative acting on field in the adjoint representation is just the ordinary derivative minus I times the commutator of A mu by phi A. Because remember, A mu was defined here as, it's written here. So A mu is a 2x2 matrix. And phi A is a 2x2 matrix because they both belong to the same representation. So in this case, the generator of SU2 in the adjoint representation amounts to the building the commutator. So this is the commutator. And that's because the adjoint representation is just the Lie algebra of the group in which the Lie bracket is represented as the commutator. Okay, so we are going to need this very important expression. Okay? And you see that this expression in the fundamental representation is just a generalization of Maxwell. You see? This is new because for Maxwell, the group G is U1, which is an abelian group. So the adjoint representation of U1 is just a trivial representation. And therefore, the commutator vanish. Phi A is a 1x1 matrix. A mu is a 1x1 matrix. So this is just a number. And this term is absent for U1. So this term is new. New for an abelian symmetry. Okay. So now we have defined what are the fields we want. We have defined what is a covariant derivative, the generalization of Maxwell. And so now we are in a good shape to define what is a local gauge transformation. The generalization of a local U1 gauge transformation for Maxwell. Okay? So what is a local gauge transformation? A local gauge transformation means that simply, instead of multiplying the matter field by a phase, which is global, by an element of the group, we make the gauge transformation, the symmetry transformation, local. Okay? So this is a transformation where we associate, for instance, let's consider a field in the fundamental representation. The fundamental representation, well, let me write it. Okay. For a field phi in the fundamental representation, which means that phi is phi I equal 1 to 2, it's a 2 vector. Okay? It depends on x, and making a global Gauss transformation means that I transform phi f of x into g of x times phi f of x, where g of x is a time-dependent matrix of SU2, so a space-time. So it's a space-time dependent 2x2 unitary matrix. Okay, so this is an analog of multiplication by a phase. Okay? Okay. So this is a global Gauss transformation. And if we consider an infinitesimal Gauss transformation, it means that we write g of x as 1 plus I alpha of x, where this is a 2x2 identity matrix, and this is an element of the Lie algebra, so this is a 2x2 traceless symmetric matrix. Okay, so basically, alpha of x belongs to the adjoint representation. That's U2. Okay? So you work this out, and what you find is that, of course, that phi f of x is transformed into phi f of x plus I alpha of x times phi f of x. And remember, remember?
Excuse me?
This is a vector and this is a matrix. Yes?
Maybe you mean alpha of x is a traceless Hermitian matrix?
Yeah, by Hermitian, I mean symmetric, I mean Hermitian. Yes. Yes. Yeah, I use the mathematical notation. Mathematicians speak about symmetric when it's Hermitian because it's related to a complex. Okay, so this is Hermitian matrix. Just that alpha equal alpha dagger. Yes. Okay. Okay, so this is a 2x2 matrix, and this is a 2 vector. So that's okay. Okay, so we need. So you see, this is just a generalization of a local Gauss transformation for a field in the adjoint representation. And of course, this applies both when phi is a scalar or when phi is a spinor. You just forget about the Dirac indices and do the transformation with respect to the group indices I, 1 to 2. Okay. Yes?
You said the field is in adjoint representation. It's still in fundamental representation, right?
No, I mean, phi is in the fundamental, yeah. But alpha lives in the adjoint. And the product of a field in the fundamental by a field in the adjoint is a field in the fundamental, because we multiply a vector by a matrix. Okay? Okay. So this is the definition is phi in the fundamental. So let me rewrite it. Phi f goes to phi f plus I alpha times alpha of x. Well, phi times phi f. Okay? That's okay. So this is the compact notation. Okay. Now, if phi A belongs to the adjoint representation, this means that phi A is a 2x2 Hermitian traceless matrix, whose three independent components give you the three elements of phi A in this dimension three. Then, well, it's easy to see that this is the action of a gauge transformation on the fundamental. The action on the adjoint representation will be given by I times the commutator of alpha and phi A, where this is a commutator. Okay? This is a commutator. And that's because both alpha and phi A are 2 by 2 Hermitian traceless matrices. So the commutator is as a correct property. Okay? And that's because the action of a global gauge transformation on a field in the adjoint is G phi A G inverse. Okay, let me write this is for a global transformation, phi adjoint becomes G and phi adjoint and G dagger. So you multiply both on the right and on the left. And it's easy to check that this gives us. Okay. Good. So now, of course, well, the in electromagnetism, the covariant derivative is introduced as a mathematical tool because it has a property that it transforms covariantly under gauge transformation. Okay. Okay. And for this to be true in the U1 theory in electromagnetism, we need the gauge we need the vector field not to transform as a matter field, but to transform this differently. So for gauge transformations for the vector field, this is going to be, again, the generalization of electromagnetism. So a global gauge transformation is going to be, so A mu of x is going to be transformed of G of x, A mu of x times G dagger of x, G dagger is G minus 1. But then we have to add a term. We see G of x, d mu of G dagger of x. Okay, and that's it, yes. And you can check that this is a generalization for a non-abelian group of what's happening in Maxwell. But in Maxwell's theory, A mu is a 1 by 1 matrix. It's a number. G is a phase, EI theta. So this becomes A mu. And this is, so for U1, G of x is EI alpha of x. So you recover the d mu alpha, the minus I d mu alpha. Yeah. But simply now, this is a 2 by 2 matrix. This is a 2 by 2 matrix. This is a 2 by 2 matrix. Okay. So for an infinitesimal, A mu of x is going to be, this is going to be to give the, so this is going to be A mu. And then we have a term involving alpha. Okay, and we get two contributions. First, we get the contribution that comes from this term, which is going to give a commutator And then we get a derivative of alpha. So what we get is A mu plus D mu alpha with the covariant derivative D mu alpha equals the ordinary derivative minus I times the commutator of I alpha with A mu. Okay, so this is the action of an infinitesimal gauge transformation on the vector field, where this is just the covariant derivative that I've wrote before on alpha. And remember, so this is a covariant derivative. And remember, now both A and alpha belongs to the adjoint representation. A mu and alpha belongs to the adjoint representation. So there are two by two traceless Hermitian matrices. And this is just applied to the generator of gauge transformation, the covariant derivative of this alpha, which is a field in the adjoint representation. Okay. The difference with U1 is that for U1, this term is not absent, so you just get the ordinary A mu plus D mu alpha. Okay? Okay, so this is a gauge transformation on the vector field, and it's exactly like in U1. Simply, the covariant derivative involves the commutator because we are not living in, we are not studying an abelian symmetry, but a non-abelian gauge symmetry. Okay. So now, of course, we want to define a theory which is gauge invariant. So we want to define a field strength. The analog of F mu nu in QED, okay, which contains information on electric magnetic fields, which are the physical degrees of freedom, observable degrees of freedom of the electromagnetic fields. Okay? So, the field strength, in fact, is defined in a mathematical way already in Maxwell's theory as a curvature, so a commutator, it's a curvature of the covariant derivative. Because once you have A mu, you can define that's a mathematical, interlude. You can define a form which is A mu dx mu. This is going to be a one form, but which lives in the adjoint representation So in fact, it's a connection on, so it defines a connection in the space of SU2 bundle over space-time. And this connection has a curvature. This is basic differential geometric stuff. And the curvature of this connection is the field strength. So the field strength is the curvature of a connection defined by A mu. Okay. And so this connection is just that F mu nu is the commutator of d mu with d nu. Okay, so d mu and d nu as an operation, differential operator acting on fields. And you can take the commutator of them. And since they involve two derivatives, they do not necessarily commute because d mu and d nu depends on A, so they do not commute. And well, you take just this formula for d mu, the formula for d mu acting on a field in the fundamental representation, or the formula for a field acting in the adjoint representation. And in any case, as in quantum Maxwell theory, you find that this is simply going to be d mu a nu minus d nu a mu. And then there is a new term. We come from the fact that the covariant derivative involves a commutator, which is there, which comes just from the fact that the covariant derivative contains commutator. Okay? So this is just the standard definition of the field strength. For my non-abelian gauge series. And remember, this belongs to the adjoint representation. This belongs to the adjoint representation. This is the Lie bracket in the adjoint representation, the commutator. So it belongs to F mu nu, lives in the adjoint representation. So it's a 2x2. Matrix, which is obtained by taking the derivative of the matrices and then the commutator of these matrices. Okay, so each component lives in the adjoint representation. Okay, for each mu nu going from 1 to, let's say, 4, if we live in 4 dimensions. Okay. And so it's a 2x2 matrix. And with respect to mu nu, it is an antisymmetric tensor. With respect to Lorentz indices. Because it's clear, it's a commutator, so it's antisymmetric. F mu nu is minus F nu mu. Okay. Okay. So, if you like, you can define a two-form, a degree 2 differential form, by writing F equal F mu nu dx mu wedge dx nu, if you like, a differential 2 form. Okay? But this is a differential 2 form, which is still a 2x2 matrix. So F mu nu has, each F component of F mu nu has three independent component, F mu nu 1, F mu nu 2, and F mu nu 3. So remember, we can write that F mu nu with my notation is F mu nu A T A. It's A equal 1, 2, 3. Okay. So there are three components of the F mu nu. So in fact, there are three components. You have three EA and BA fields. You have one electric field and one magnetic field for each charge. For each charge. Okay? And so this is how you define the analog of a of the electromagnetic tensor in a non-abelian gate series. And in fact, there are three electromagnetic tensors because there are three charges. Okay. And now, we can define the analog of a Maxwell action that is going to be a, give a classical dynamics for this field. But before that, let's discuss the gauge invariance properties of F. What is the effect of the gauge transformation? On F mu nu. So if you make a gauge transformation on A, like this one, what is the effect of A on F? And then there is a difference between the Maxwell theory, because F belongs to the adjoint representation. So it transforms non-trivially on the group transformation, the symmetry. So under an infinitesimal gauge transformation, where remember, A mu goes to A mu plus the covariant derivative of alpha, which involves the commutator. Then you do the calculation and you find that F mu nu transforms into F mu nu minus I times F mu nu commutator with alpha. So remember, this is a function of x, this is a function of x, this is a function of x, this is a function of x. So F mu nu transforms, so remember, this is a 2 by 2 matrix. 2 by 2, 2 by 2, 2 by 2. So it transforms non-trivially under a global gauge transformation, but it transforms locally. So this form is natural, because since F belongs to the adjoint representation, this is a way a group transformation acts on elements in the adjoint representation. So it's not invariant. It transforms covariantly, but locally. You see, no derivative. The derivative term in the gauge transformation law for the vector field has disappeared. No derivative. This is the transformation law of F mu nu of x depends only on alpha at the point x, which is all what we need. So it's locally gauge covariant, while the original vector field is not gauge invariant or gauge covariant. Okay, which is good. That's all what we need. But it means that under a gauge transformation, the component F mu nu A mixes, so the electric and magnetic fields transforms. They are component of A. So EA and BA belongs also to the adjoint representation. So they transform accordingly. So you mixed what you call, so there is no global definition of what is the electric field in one direction component because they transform. Okay, so we are done. Because then, We can define the analog of a Maxwell action principle, Lagrangian, to what's called the Young-Mills action, which will be an invariant on the gauge transformation, and the action, Young-Mills, for the Young-Mills theory, is just going to be the same thing that what we did for Maxwell. So we take integral over space-time, and we take f mu nu times f mu nu. So these are Lorentz, so we can raise and lower indices with a metric of space-time, f mu nu. So this is f mu nu of x and f mu nu of x. But this is a 2x2 matrix. This is a 2x2 matrix. So, and in order to have something which is invariant under local gauge transformation, we need to take the trace. This is 2x2, this is 2x2 matrix, so this is the sum of the two diagonal elements. Okay, and in order to have a correct definition, let's introduce the factor G, which is going to measure the, so G is going to be a coupling constant. Okay, so this is a, so this is the analog for SU2 gauge theory of Maxwell. Remember, in Maxwell, this is 1x1 matrix, so it's just a real field. And the trace reduced just to you take f mu nu of x times f mu nu of x, so it's the square of the original electromagnetic tensor. Here you have to take the, not only you have to take the sum of the indices, so you have to take a trace of this in Lorentz indices, so mu nu is both, it's an antisymmetric Lorentz tensor, and it's a symmetric traceless, well, Hermitian traceless 2x2 matrix, so respect to the group, and you, here you take the trace with respect to the Lorentz indices, and here you take the trace with respect to the group indices, so trace with respect to the group indices. I equal 1, 2. Yes?
And the product of, in terms of the adjoint representation, is it an inner product or outer product?
Here, this is just the inner product because we take the, this is a 2x2 matrix. So for SU2, we take just the ordinary product. Of 2x2 matrices. Okay. That's because the group is semi-simple. For more general group, you may have different things, objects which are invariant. So in fact, you may have different Casimir operators, and you may have different forms. So it's more complicated for not semi-simple groups. Like, for instance, if you take the group U2, which is U1 times SU2, it contains both an SU2 group and the U1 component. So you may have two couplings, one associated to the Maxwell component and one associated to SU2. But forget about that. This is a subtlety. OK. Good. And this is a classical action for Young-Mills, for the non-abelian gauge field. And this action is invariant under local gauge transformations. Okay. But now, remember the definition of F. F contains commutators. So this action, if you expand it in terms of components, it will involve objects which are complicated. So for instance, remember, F mu nu is an antisymmetric matrix. So it's of the form sum over A of F mu A mu nu A TA, where TA are the 1/2 sigma A, the Pauli matrices. Okay. And A mu, F mu nu involves commutators. So F mu nu A, well, it's written somewhere, but F mu nu A is d mu a nu a minus d nu a mu a. And then you get a commutator term, which becomes epsilon a b c a mu b nu c. So this is a component for definition of F. So F, in fact, is nonlinear in the in A. So it involves basically products of electric and magnetic fields. It involves some E times E vectorial B and things like that. Okay? So keep this if you like. And this means that if you write the action, write the action, and I'm going to write it explicitly. It's a bit tedious, but it's just an application of what we did in terms of the three component. You get that, for instance, where is it written? I've wrote it somewhere. Yeah, the Lagrangian density here. So you see that since it's Lagrangian, you have this coupling constant. We are going to see the effect of this in the coupling theory. So, but here, the action is 1 over g squared times trace of FF. So you can rescale A by calling A equal g times A tilde. A mu A. I'm just rescaling of A. So then F mu nu is, you get a factor G, and the factor G squared. So in terms of this A tilde, you can compute the Lagrangian, the trace of F mu nu, and this becomes, you get a minus. So the Lagrangian. So you can write the action as minus 1, 4, d mu a nu a minus d nu a mu a with this tilde here and this tilde here times d mu a nu a minus d nu A mu A. This is the ordinary Maxwell term that comes from this times this. But then you get the term minus G 1/2 epsilon ABC D mu A nu tilde of A minus D nu A mu A times A mu B and A nu C. This is a term that comes from the commutator. And then you get a term over the G squared, and you get 1/4, and you get A mu A nu B, A mu A nu B, minus A mu A nu B, A mu B, A nu A, which is different. So this is the ordinary Maxwell term. And this is two terms which are nonlinear. You see, this is a cubic and this is a quartic term. You can rewrite them in terms of electric and magnetic field if you like. But the net result of this term is that this is a classical action. So if from this classical action, you get the Young-Mills equation of motion, the analog of Maxwell's equation, you see that they are nonlinear in A, or in E and B. Because of this term. So this means that there are interaction. The vector fields, the analog of photons, interact in the theory, at the difference of Maxwell's theory, where the solution of Maxwell's equation or just electromagnetic field in vacuum spaces are plane waves. It's not a free theory. Anymore. And of course, this was to be expected because the gauge bosons, well, the analog of the photons, carry charges. Because they carry charges. While the photon carry no charge. So this was to be expected. So this makes the theory much more complicated. Okay? So this is a highly non-trivial interacting theory, even at the classical theory. I think even nowadays, you know, people are still studying the classical solution of Young-Mills theory. They have a lot of interesting properties, and a lot is known, but a lot of is not known. Okay. So we are going to see later what this. Well, in next lecture, when we start to discuss the quantization, what this corresponds to when you quantize the theory, what kind of diagram are. But let me just say one very simple word, which is that this was pure Young-Mills. Now, what is the coupling with matter? So I won't discuss, write any terms, but basically the coupling with matter is said that, as usual, replace ordinary derivative by covariant derivative. In the classical action, for matter fields, you because simply, since the matter fields phi and psi belongs to the, well, here, the fundamental representation, and since the covariant derivative transforms covariantly, or belongs to the adjoint representation, replacing in the action, you have a phi and psi belong to some fundamental representation. We know that d mu belongs to the adjoint representation. So they both transform in a covariant way under the action of the group. So they have not good transformation property under local gauge transformation. And this ensures that we'll get a coupling which is gauge invariant. So the coupling with matter goes as for the Maxwell theory. Simply, it will be more complicated because it will be a coupling through currents, and the currents carry charges. So the physics would be more complicated because the boson have charges, the matter fields have charges, the particle fields in matter have charges, and they may exchange charge during the interaction. So they change what's in the language of QCD, they change color. But we are going to discuss that when discussing the quantization rules and the Feynman diagrams briefly. OK, so I'm done for the classical theory. Thank you.